Okay, so there was obviously another conference this week. So what kind of conference did we have this week?
This is Computex in Taiwan. It's a yearly conference of PC hardware, and it's just when those companies get together and release all sorts of new toys, mainly the Asian companies like Asus, MSI, and whatnot.
Anything good come out of it?
Well, Intel finally answered AMD's Ryzen processing line. So the i9 processor is a real thing now. They've released Kaby Lake X, and of course X is for extreme because extreme starts with the letter X and not an E. So Kaby Lake X has up to 18 cores and 36 threads. So yes, we got a new socket again, and a new chipset from Intel. So they're answering, but 18 core version is going to start at $1,900.
Yeah, their price is always real high when they come out with a new technology like that. It'll come down eventually, and in like 17 years from now, we'll actually get to use them.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, I imagine when Threadripper comes out, the pricing war will actually start, because Intel's actually going to beat AMD to the market with Kaby Lake X versus Threadripper. But Threadripper motherboards were talked about at Computex, and they showed the socket, and it's actually an LGA socket. So instead of the pins being on the processor, pins are on the motherboard like Intel has been doing for years. So this is AMD's first LGA processor, which it's a good move for them. But it literally looked like two CPU sockets with the bar cut out of the middle. You actually see two rectangles in the socket. It's kind of funny.
That's great. I did notice there's one thing that I kind of found that was kind of interesting that's coming out from Computex. It's supposed to ship this August. Intel had, I think last year, their like compute stick or something.
Yeah.
$100 PC and a stick thing. Well, they're coming out with like a compute card now. It's like a credit card size PC. I think it's great that these machines are getting smaller and smaller, and I can really see use for those, using these as like digital signage and stuff like that in schools.
Yeah, and a long time back in the early 2000s, Sun Microsystems did something similar to this called Java Card, but it didn't have near the compute power that these things have. And, well, I think these are going to be really cool. I mean, it opened, like I said, the market up for, like you said, digital signage and whatnot. I mean, that's awesome.
Not only that, it's in the article it says LG is going to stick these compute cards in its monitors to turn them into all-in-ones.
There we go. I wonder if they're going to run WebOS.
Like the refrigerators or whatever it is they got running?
Yeah, and the TVs I have in here.
But I know that's kind of cool to me because I'm a big fan of the all-in-ones, not just because I'm a Mac fanboy and I like the iMac, but I put in these Dell Optiplexes with touchscreens for our cafeteria serving lines because they use the touchscreen for the application that we use for cafeteria stuff. And I just love the fact that it's just all in one box. I mean, it makes working on them a little bit troublesome sometimes, but I was able to crack open one of these Optiplex all-in-ones that we got, and surprisingly, they have gotten better to work on. They're not as modular as they are in Dell desktops, but they are pretty modular for an all-in-one PC.
Yeah, I think all-in-one PCs make a lot of sense for a lot of users. In fact, I'm looking at some of those exact same Dells you have for our serving lines. I'm going to have to move into the unsupported branch for the cafeteria software that we use them, but I think it's going to be worth it to get rid of the antiquated terminal clients that we have for our software. And, hey man, it can't be worse than the iMac I had years ago. I remember I needed to replace the hard drive in it because it went out, and I had to remove the glass and 27 screws to replace the hard drive.
No, you open this, there's even no screws on the back of the ones we got. There's no screws that hold on the back plastic panel. You just pop that thing right off. Now, it did sound like you were breaking it in half whenever you pulled it off, but you really weren't. It was just that secure on there, even with no screws.
Well, that's cool. I guess they kind of have a built-in limit of how many times you can work on it. You've worked on it 10 times. No more snap together.
That's right. But, you know, Dell they're kind of like that with their machines. They make everything modular, and, like, their desktops, you just, like, slide a little thing off the back, pull the case thing off. You can change out a hard drive without even changing a single screw.
Yeah, I love that design, especially for us enterprise environments, because we have to work on a lot of things, and if I had to take out 6 screws every time, I'm not going to buy that product again.
It's true. And, you know, another use that I can see with these compute cards and these compute sticks, looking into some VDI solutions with these.
Yeah, that'd make a really cool thin client. Literally thin client.
I mean, it comes in like four variants. One, it's got a 7th generation Core i5 vPro in it with 4 gigs of RAM and 128 SSD. I mean, this thing's, for a computer the size of a credit card, this thing's pretty powerful.
Yeah, and with one of the things I don't think they talk enough about, it was with vPro, you're actually getting the enterprise version of Intel Management Engine, which gives you kind of like an IPKVM access to that hardware.
It's just amazing that everything just keeps getting smaller and smaller and smaller and yet more powerful. What is that? It's like Murphy's Law or something like that?
Moore's Law. Murphy's Law is what I have at our school. What will go wrong will. I mean, what can go wrong will.
Oh, so Moore's Law is everything gets better and smaller?
Yeah, it's every 18 months computing power doubles and transistors shrink in half. Yeah, and speaking of Moore's Law, AMD, of course, they're talking more about Zen 2, the next version of their Zen processors already.
Is Zen kind of their server line processor that kind of competes with the Xeon, or is that something else? Because I'm...
Zen's the whole underlying architecture this go-round. There's Ryzen for the consumer line, Threadripper for the workstation line, and then Epic for the server line. But they're all Zen cores. They just weren't allowed to use the name because Asus already did.
Okay, I got you.
Yeah, but AMD's already talking about how they're going to be moving from 14 nanometers, which is what their current architecture is on, what Kaby Lake's on, which just about everything's on, to a 7 nanometer architecture, which means power consumption can drop as much as 100%, obviously, but 50%, it can be cut in half.
More and less power consumption means more battery life in those things.
Yep, and speaking of battery life, Asus released Republica Gamers. Yes, this is an education show, and I just said Republica Gamers. That makes no sense.
Hey, we all got to have a little downtime.
You're right. We all need some, I'm not going to say World of Warcraft, but let's do some Wildlands. But they actually released a laptop with a full-blown Ryzen 1700 8-core 16-thread CPU in it. Take that, Apple.
So is this the first computer that's coming out with the Ryzen in it natively?
It's the first laptop that has. Their actual mobile variants of the chips aren't going to be out till second half.
I think also Dell actually released a new budget-friendly or budget-conscious gaming PC at Computex, from what I understand. But the article that I read said that by the time you actually add the hardware into it to actually make it a decent gaming machine, you're over your budget.
Yeah, that tends to be the story with it. You go in saying, I'm only going to spend $800, and $2,700 later, you have what you want.
You know, and that's kind of why I never really could get into PC gaming. I played a little bit because, you know, I bought a computer for Grand Theft Auto 3, I'm not going to lie. But after that, I really played Medal of Honor Allied Assault, and that was kind of it, because to play anything else, it just kept requiring so much better hardware to actually make it a decent user experience, and I just couldn't afford it. I just couldn't do it at the time.
Yeah, and I'm not gonna go into the specs of the machine I have at the home, because Carla may listen to this show one time in the future and know what's actually underneath that desk. But it plays some stuff pretty well. We'll go ahead and say that.
Just buy it a piece at a time, right?
Piece at a time, and make sure your eBay's good.
It's not that the components are expensive. It's just that, I mean, they're probably all less than $200 for each component, but they all add up.
Yeah, except when you get to like these video cards now. I mean, heck, you look at a NVIDIA 1080 Ti, and those start at about $750.
Oh, you know, I think I heard about those.
They're dang fast, but they start at about $750.
That's just crazy. But I guess that's for those professional video game players, I guess, over in...
That and the Bitcoin miners.
Yeah. That's right, because I know I was watching Amazing Race last week, and one of the challenges they have to do... Yeah, education show, we're going to talk about reality TV now. But one of the challenges they had to do was they had to play a professional gamer to get past to the next stage. Pretty funny.
Oh, that's pretty funny. But we do need to note, we did wait till school ended to talk about these things. So it is summer, so...
And that's what our main topic is going to be about today when we eventually can get there. We're going to talk about like some things that we do during the summer, things that we may be doing this year that we do in a one-time thing or something that we do all the time. But you did mention Apple, and I just kind of want to throw it out there that next week we have another conference. The Apple Developer Conference is coming out, so that's going to be basically Apple Day is Monday. So we hear the keynote to see all the new Mac OS and iOS updates that they're coming out with and maybe some new hardware. So we'll be able to talk about that next week.
So are we actually going to get the iPhone 8 this time?
Well, we won't know anything about the iPhone until probably the fall. But
Yeah, that's a Christmas item.
Yeah, and that's sort of their thing. They'll release the software to kind of get you ready for it, but then they'll release like the flagship hardware in the fall. So, but it is the 10th anniversary iPhone, so who knows what it's going to be.
Hey, that's pretty cool. And I do like the fact that they release the software before the hardware, unlike Microsoft, where they release a phone and then 2 years later it actually works.
Yeah, that's true.
2 years later it works, and then they go ahead and kill it after they fix it.
But also, I wanted to mention a little bit of Google news. Apparently, Google Sheets is adding the ability to create charts in their spreadsheets with natural language commands. And if you're familiar with an app called Fantastical on iOS or macOS, you can create calendar entries doing that too. So basically you say, I want to have lunch with Chris at 12 o'clock at wherever you want to go. And so it'll create an entry. It'll say lunch, and it'll have Chris, lunch with Chris, and say the time and the place, and basically using the natural language and type in sentences. Because I don't know how it is on Android, but on iOS, to like create a calendar entry, it's just so many taps. And so just to be able to do it with natural language is kind of neat and a lot quicker. And so using charts, using natural language or charts is going to be interesting, because you could have your columns or whatever, and it's like, hey, make a chart showing the X scale of whatever, and it just sort of builds the chart for you. I just find that intuitive.
Hey, I think that's a good feature, because I have broke charts so many times in every spreadsheet program. I've managed to create eyeballs out of pie charts, and I don't know how I've done that. But having a computer tell me I'm wrong and fix it for me would be awesome.
Or at least trying to tell Sheets, hey, this is what I'm trying to do, and it'll be like, okay, here you go.
And say, by the way, it should not look like an eyeball.
It's probably, yeah, you're right. They're probably going to stick some of their TPUs in the Google Sheets server so that they could learn some, so they can get some machine learning going on, so they can learn how to build charts.
Hey, I'm all for it. Hey, one of the things I also wanted to mention, one of our fellow tech directors from another district around us sent out an email and was letting us know about Google Drive file stream. And we've talked on and off about this between just us, not on the show, but we've been wanting a solution to basically give our Google Drive as a mapped directory without having to sync all the files. And it looks like Google's going to do it, so we're not going to have to pay for something.
And that's good. I just hope that it can actually... I'm hoping that they're, as they develop this, I hope they reach out to people like you or me. Not necessarily us, but maybe people that in our situations, that, and they could be like, hey, this is what we're wanting. Hey, at login, map the user's login somehow with Active Directory to their Google account and mount their drive or something on login.
You know, what I can actually see happening is them not doing it with the directory, but with Chrome profiles. So if someone's signed into Chrome, they just take that same profile data out of app data and use that as their authentication. So if they're signed into Chrome, it would work.
I would even go as far as to say, hey, just let it be like a Chrome extension and just open Chrome and it just mounts.
Hey, I'm all for it, but I did sign up for the early adopter program right before we started this show, so hopefully next week I'll have some more information we can talk about on it.
And the one cool thing that it is doing that's different from the Google Sync tool that's already out there, number one, it works with Team Drives that they just came out with, which are just phenomenal. I love Team Drives already. But it also, it's doing this new thing that Dropbox Business announced and that iCloud Drive announced last year, where if you want it to, I'm assuming you can change the setting, but basically it gives you kind of like an idea. I don't really know how to say it, but just like an idea of what's in your drive, but without it actually storing it on your computer.
Yeah, they're linked. They're SIM links instead of actual files.
Oh, there we go.
So, I'm excited about it, because that's the default behavior from what they're saying is just SIM links, so nothing's actually stored locally. I can't wait.
The only difference between this and what iCloud Drive is doing is I might actually trust it a little bit better.
You mean it won't break for 2 weeks at a time?
Well, I don't click the checkbox that says optimize storage with my iCloud Drive, because I don't want it to remove things that I haven't used in a while. To save space, because I don't want it to just kind of go away into the ether. And plus, with my offsite backups and stuff that I run, I want to be able to still back up those files.
Hey, it makes perfect sense. And so, well, I'm about to have all my eggs in one basket then. Once this product's in full swing, my backups are in Google Drive, my home directories are going to be in Google Drive, and our whole life is in Google Drive. starting to question why I even have any kind of server infrastructure locally.
I think we're going to get there at one point. I think it's coming, and I think it's probably going to happen a lot sooner than we think. I don't know how I'm going to feel about it because I like my VMware. I like running my own little data center here. I'm a fan of it. I like to do new things with it and upgrade it and stuff like that. But I can also see the benefit of having everything in the cloud. The main reason I really want to do Google Drive is because no matter where our users are, they can do their work.
Yes, and that's been the biggest appeal to Google Apps since we started it, and everybody has taken it and ran with it. They love having everything everywhere.
And so I see the benefit in cloud-hosted services because of that. Your data everywhere. But I think it's coming, and I'm worried about it. But and it's going to be a big transition because you have curriculum that's being taught in your school all of Texas does, the business information management stuff, that these folks still rely on Office. And in fact, I was told by some teachers before that they really don't want to teach the Google Drive because they want to teach Office because that's what the kids are going to see in the enterprise. And I tried to explain to them, I was like, look, I mean, that may be happening now, but more and more businesses are switching to Google Apps for their productivity as well. And so they'll probably see an environment of both of them. And so it's probably best to teach everything.
And I agree with that. In fact, I used to work for a company called The Modern Group. I'll go ahead and give them a plug here. Good company. But there was a department, The Modern Group's a company there in the oil industry. They build frac tanks, things of that nature for the oil manufacturing industry. And they had two different departments that even though we were an Office 365 environment, they were 100% Google there. All their work was done in Google Drive in an enterprise setting. So it's already there in places.
I mean, they're moving their email and calendaring and contacts to Google. And so why not just take advantage of the tools that you get with it? So, I mean, it's coming. And I think it's going to be beneficial for everybody. I'm one of those guys. I'm one of those skeptics on the internet that you read about that are real skeptical about using Google services and them mining your information for data to sell to advertisers and stuff like that. Because bottom line, Google's an advertising company. And the only reason they can provide these services is because they're trying to come up with new ways to gather data so they can sell ads. And I know with Google Apps for Business or G Suite for Business and G Suite for Education, they're not supposed to be selling our information to advertisers or whatever. But I mean, how trustworthy really can we be here?
We honestly, and they don't have to sell them to other advertisers. They are an advertiser.
Yeah, but I mean, they're not supposed to use our data for statistics to be able to sell to companies to put ads on or whatever. They're supposed to leave our data alone instead of mining it or whatever.
And I think they do for the most part, but it is an interesting swing of things. I mean, yes, we have that BIM class we're required to teach for Texas, and it is a Microsoft curriculum. I mean, Microsoft's not the only product out there anymore.
No, absolutely not. And really, when you compare apples to apples with Google Docs and Microsoft Word, per se, I mean, really, it's... Now, obviously, Word can do a lot more advanced things than Google Docs can, just because it's a native app and not a web app. But for the majority of features that people probably use, they're probably on both platforms. And so it's almost like you could teach one and you're teaching the other one at the same time.
Yeah, I mean, they're converging the feature sets. I mean, Microsoft reduced the feature set for the Office 365 versions of their products, which are, again, web apps, and even the native mobile apps have a reduced feature set. So they understand that 90% of the users probably only use about 10% of the features.
I mean, I know a guy that he personally subscribes to Office 365 for his stuff, and, well, besides you, I know another guy that is literally what he does all of his typing and stuff in. He doesn't have the I don't think he has the one where you could download the apps, maybe. I don't know, is that still a thing?
Yeah, they do have that one. It's free edition. You can use all the online apps for free, but they with the home edition you can actually install it on 5 PCs, and that's what I have, mainly for family members to have a version of Office that's legal.
I get the professional and the professional plus mixed up, so that's why I was a little confused there. But I think he uses just the free version as his word processing on his computer. That's what he uses. There is nothing locally on his computer that he types stuff on. It is all on the free version of Office 365 in the web app.
And it works. But and at that point, though, I really do think Google's doing that part better. And if that's what you're doing with Microsoft, you really should give Google a second chance, because you're already changing the UI on yourself.
And not only that, I think Google's collaboration tools when it comes to their online productivity suite are like second to none.
Yeah, for an example, what we're using right now.
I mean, yeah, we have a Google Doc open right now where we share between us to plan our shows or whatever, but I mean, you could do spreadsheets and presentations and Word documents or whatever, and everybody can collaborate all at the same time and do everything, and it's just, and it's kind of flawless. It just kind of works. Nothing really kind of hangs up. But I will say this, though. I will always prefer Excel over Google Sheets.
Just so you can actually use the keyboard shortcuts?
Yes. And you know, that's another thing. I do like to be able to copy and paste with right-click, so...
Yeah, and can I please select two cells that are not adjacent to each other?
Yeah.
Please, Google.
Excel is like, when it comes to spreadsheeting applications, that is like, that is the bar. That is the standard right there. And I'm a big fan of Excel. I don't know it as much as I like to. I don't do pivot charts, I guess is what they're called. Pivot tables? Something. I don't even know what they're for. I just knew I hated them back in school. But
it's when you set a chart on end and turn it.
Oh,
it pivots.
I got you. I like that. But Excel is just so powerful, and I use it for a lot of my stuff. So, in fact, I do most of my documentation stuff inside of a spreadsheet as opposed to a Word document.
See, and here at our school, all my documentation is in Google Docs, and in fact, on my machines, I don't even install Office because I'm trying to eat my own dog food that I'm pushing down to them.
But you know, I mean... That's it. I mean, really, it's possible. I mean, you're using a Chromebook as your daily driver for a machine, configuring switches and firewalls and all that other stuff. I mean, you're doing just fine with a Chromebook.
It does work. It does work. Now, I do have to cheat every now and then. I do fire up an RDP session.
Well, there's just something. Well, I mean, I'm a Mac user, and so, I mean, it's not the exact same situation, but it's similar because it's a totally different operating system than the network that you're managing. And probably 90% of what I need to manage I can do with macOS. But like you said, I either have to fire up a VM to edit group policy or do a remote desktop session. So, I mean, there's just some things you're not going to get away from as long as you have to run some Windows.
Oh, yeah. And over the next few years, we're probably going to see those courses change the way we're going. I mean, if we start having more Chrome OS hardware than we do Windows hardware, we're really going to have to evaluate what we're doing.
You know, and I can actually even see those courses kind of expanding into using more, like, web tools. Not just, like, productivity suites, but, like things just ballparking kind of out there. It's like using YouTube or using social media or teaching things like that, because a lot of times these businesses or whatever, not only are you doing... you doing like documents and stuff like that for business, you also have to like take care of like social networking feeds, and a lot of them are being more social, and you're posting videos to YouTube. And so I think I see that class expanding more because businesses are using more of those online tools than just Word, Excel, and PowerPoint.
Oh yeah, that mean you got to go where the users are.
Does that mean I have to open up Snapchat in my filter?
No, never, ever, ever. And in fact, let's find some way to get it removed out of the root DNS zones.
That's totally possible. Well, I mean, I guess you could just host Snapchat.com in your own DNS and point it to wherever you want it to
yes.
go. Hint, hint. If there's a website you don't want people to go to, just make a zone in your DNS for it and point it to 127.0.0.1.
Or if you really want to jack with their brains, set you up like a proxy server locally that just redirects it all to Google.
I totally did that one time for Facebook. It made my wife so mad because I did it at home.
Yeah, you can't do that at home.
I was just seeing if I could do it.
But, or you can make all the users really mad and redirect everything to Yahoo, because who goes to Yahoo?
I got one better for you. AOL.
Oh, gosh. You've got mail.
Well, doesn't Yahoo have a new name anyway?
Yeah, bankrupt.
Bankrupt, yeah, that's right. And an ousted CEO who got a big payout on the way out the door, from what I understand.
Well, everybody expected a lot from Marissa, and she just didn't deliver anything.
You know, I kind of had high hopes for her, too. I was really hoping she would turn it around. They were really doing some neat things with their mobile apps. I mean, they had, for a while, they had the best weather app on iOS. The Yahoo weather app was phenomenal. In fact, when iOS 7, I think, came out, it's like they actually modeled the native weather app to almost look like the Yahoo weather app. I mean, it was that good.
And I think it was getting the weather data from Yahoo anyway.
Well, I think it was, and now it's using Weather Channel, but back then it was using Yahoo, and it was phenomenal. It was gorgeous. I mean, it was a beautiful app. I mean, you look outside, and it was thunderstorms or whatever, you'd open the app, and it would have like an actual thunderstorm on the screen. It was beautiful. Now they're all doing that. So, but it was like, it started a trend, and then, believe it or not, they came out with another app, I think. Here we are talking about Yahoo.
Well, somebody's got two. Nobody else is.
The Yahoo Mail app actually got a lot better. I mean, it was just like, I don't know if like the function of it was good, but the UI of it was gorgeous. I mean, it just looked good.
Yeah, I think the final nail in the coffin for Yahoo, besides not making any money for 10 years, was when AT&T broke that partnership for providing email addresses to DSL accounts.
Oh, yeah. That was a... I know people that have those, too, and I think they're getting, like, turned off now.
Yeah, it was just one of those, yeah, we've lost faith in your company.
That and the hacking, man. They got hacked bad multiple times.
Oh, man, we could have hacking stories every week on here. I think, what was it?
Chipotle got hacked.
Oh, did they did? What they?
Yeah. There was like a 3-week period, I think, that they released. And it's like, hey, if you went to these stores during this time period or whatever, you might want to get your credit cards changed.
Yeah, I saw something where some government agency, I can't believe I can't remember what it is right now, left a bunch of data on a public AWS instance.
Oh, I think I heard about that too. Well, nuts.
Boneheaded decisions. And those are the things that we try to evaluate and fix during the summers, is those major issues. Not releasing public data, but... correcting our architectures and our environment so things bad don't happen.
And I love your transition into our topic, but I do want to kind of go back a little bit and mention that's kind of why I'm a little bit leery about using just cloud-hosted stuff, because of all that sensitive data that we have as far as like student data and information on these kids and employees and stuff like that, hosting all of that in a cloud service. I mean, I just, and not that we're going to do something purposefully, but something can happen. I mean, anything can happen. Something can get, like, corrupt in an update or something like that, and all of a sudden all this information is public. And that's kind of what I worry about.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we could be 100% on top of our game and have everything patched and whatnot, but if there's an exploit that happens that we don't have control over, well, it could still leak information.
Exactly. And, yeah, and that's one of the reasons why I like my data center here, because it's like I'm on top of those patches, and then I can make sure that things don't have access to what they need. But, you know, we talked about security and stuff last week, and we'll get back into it again in the future. But let's talk summer projects, man. What do you got going on this summer?
Man, we're wrapping up our construction projects. We built a new high school last year. Ignore the fact that kids were in it all year. We're signing it off this next week, so we're actually going to have the building. So I was dealing with some of that this past year. But this year we had a new wing to our junior high built on, new cafeteria, athletic facilities, and I'm just going to be wrapping up some of those projects and then cleaning up some closets that have just been ignored over the years. I'm sure you have some of them too in your school.
Well, just so you know, I've already done this project.
Well, I know you've been here. And you know the long mile and a half hallway I have in our old high school?
Oh, yes.
That center closet is going to be fixed.
Oh, that is great. And you know what? If you find my notebook in there...
Is it a black spiral-bound notebook?
It may be. I know I'm pretty sure I left a notebook in there at one point.
There is one in the rack still.
It might be mine. Who knows?
Yeah, but that rack has been in a state of disarray for 15 years.
Oh,
and I just got the new two-post rack to put in there. It's on one of those awful swinging wall mount racks. And the rack's shallower than the switches that are in it, so you can't close it. It just stays propped open all the time with cables hanging out every which way. In fact, I'll take a picture of it so we can post that somewhere where everybody can see it so we can get some before and after here. this is awful. I have to take down the entire infrastructure to fix this closet.
I completely understand what you're coming from. I actually did mine with our federal funding. We actually got new network gear in probably beginning of this year. And so I spent many weekends changing out switches and closets. And while I have to unplug everything, let's pull out all these 5 or 6 foot cables that a 1 foot cable will do the job for. And we actually bought a whole bunch of 1 foot cables, and I've actually cleaned up a whole bunch of my closets.
That's awesome. 1 foot cables are my favorite thing ever. In fact, I have a box of 50 of them underneath the computer that I'm recording on right now.
I have a few left because I think I have a couple more standalone shelves with some switches in them that I want to take care of.
Unfortunately, with this center closet, that's such a mess. I'm not going to be able to go to 1 foot cables because of the terminations that have been there so long. It's still going to have to, all the patch panels and whatnot are still going to have to sit at the top of the rack, but I can at least get some cable management going on the sides.
Get you some Velcro and some zip ties and get after it.
Oh, yeah. I might even get some of that fancy Chatsworth vertical cable management that I can bolt to the side of the rack.
Oh, that's so good. I was going to do that for my main closet, but I went with 1 foot cable, so I didn't need it.
Yeah. And it was funny, in the new high school construction, we have all of that nice, fancy cable management stuff, but then we have 1 foot cables, and it just goes right over it because there's no need to go through it.
Exactly. In fact, I took the management we did have in our racks, I took them out because, and just like collapsed the patch panels and switches all together.
Nice. That's what I have now going over there. I have panel switch, panel switch, panel switch. I love
yes.
it.
Yes. Do not buy chassis switches. Do stacking switches. We know from experience.
Yes. They used to preach chassis switch, chassis switch, chassis switch. Now, while they do have more compute power as far as for things like multicast and snooping, man, pizza box switches stacking, racking, you just have so much easier times in management with them as far as physical management.
And you're going to get so much throughput in that backplane now that there's no reason why not to.
No.
I mean, I think I'm pulling 20 gigs on a backplane for a stack, so I mean, that's plenty.
It's plenty for, especially most of our stacks are going to have two or three tops. Now, I do have some ridiculous stacks in that new school of ours. I actually have a stack of 9, but it does good.
I love stack switches. That is the way to go. I've had some experience with some chassis switches and cabling. I cabled up a new rack, or three of them actually, and two of the racks had two Cisco 4510s at the bottom of it, and each one had like 300 something drops, and so, and we plugged every single one of them in, and it was just like 3 days of trying to actually make this look good.
Yeah, you end up not even being able to see the switch in the end. It makes you wonder how much air can actually flow through there.
And then you have a bad patch cable.
You just leave it and run the new one.
Yeah. Well, when they're all plugged in, you have to change it.
Yeah.
So, but what other stuff? What are some of the things that you do? Like, you're obviously not going to be cleaning closets every year. So we have those projects that we do that we're doing this year, and I have some that I'm doing this year, and I'll get into those in a minute. But what are some things that you do every year?
Well, every year I do evaluate the server architecture to see if there's any improvements I can make to it. But as far as like desktops, people, the user workstations, we do connect to each one and actually clean them up. We have a task list that we go through about removing profiles that don't need to be on there anymore. Go ahead and verifying new drivers that could potentially resolve issues. Removing all the temporary files from previous updates. And just trying to optimize that hardware so it can run better for the next year.
That's
one
good.
Thing I do not recommend, though. Do not run anything that says it optimizes the registry.
Oh, yeah, those are the worst.
All it's going to do is jack up your registry. There's a reason things are in the registry. Now, granted, there's probably some things that don't need to be, but there's no possible way any application can know everything that should be in there. Just don't do it.
Yeah, I mean, I've had some bad experiences with that. Just leave it alone. It's not taking up that much space on the hard drive. It's not really bothering anything. Just leave it alone.
No, and in fact, we had somebody here run CC Cleaner, and they did the maximum cleaning. and it actually removed the network profile service out of the registry.
And I like CCleaner application. I mean, when it comes to cleaning everything but the registry, it does great.
Yeah.
It clears out all this profile. I mean, it doesn't clear profiles, but I mean, it clears out like browser history and all that other fun stuff and temporary files and stuff like that. It even helps you uninstall some applications that for some reason don't show up in the ad removes program list sometimes. But yeah, I don't use the registry part.
It was CCleaner. We do use CCleaner, but I tell them not to use the registry part, and they just got a little overzealous and clicked the aggressive clean, and it removed the network profile service. It couldn't even tell if Windows was activated or not. It was crazy what it did.
And at that point, that's pretty much just a reinstall to fix all that.
No. No.
What did
I did
you do
something
to fix this?
I did something you probably shouldn't do, but it worked. So I'm going to put it in my little bag of tricks. I went to a working machine of the same OS and the same OS version, so it was the same patch level, and went into the local machine, current version, Microsoft Windows NT, profiles, and exported the... If you ever go in there, you'll notice that there's a list of profiles in there, and there's three that are much shorter than the other ones.
Mm-hmm.
Those three are the system, the network, and I can't remember what the other one is. I exported those and re-imported them with a registry. Bam, everything's working again.
There you go. Quick and dirty fix.
Oh, I'm sure it's dirty. I'm sure it's going to bite me in the middle of next year.
But you know what? It got it working for this year, and that's all that matters.
Oh, yeah. It does no longer has a black background saying I stole it.
So you use CCleaner. What other things do you use to clean up your machines? Like, what are the tools?
Well, that's actually the only packaged application that we use. Everything else is a native application, you know, the disk cleanup, the disk defragmenter, because we still do have a lot of spindle drives out here. Not everything's in SSD. In fact, very few things are in SSD out here.
I need to share you, I have a batch file that actually cleans up profiles.
Did you get it from the Fog project?
I don't know where I got it from, but it's like you edit the file and you tell it like what profiles you want to leave on there,
mm-hmm. And
then you just like right-click, run as admin, and there it goes.
Yeah. We do something similar, not batched, but I have a technician here that she likes to do that. So I just kind of let her run with it and do it.
I got you. But I remember back in the old XP days, you could just go into documents and settings and just delete the folders.
You still can, but it just leaves the registry entries in.
Well, I've actually had it where like if you delete a profile and that user tries to log back in, it gives them like a temporary profile and just all jacks everything up.
Yeah, that's when that registry entry is still there. Now, they still do have the users and profiles console in there. I think it's you can right-click on computer, go to properties, and it's under one of those advanced tabs. You used to use it to copy profiles. You can still delete them that way, and it'll do it correct.
Yeah, but the thing is so slow, and you want to do them all at one time.
Oh,
not
of course. And it barely finishes one in under 20 minutes in that program.
Oh, yeah. But my script that I use to clean them up, man, that thing takes forever to run. That's why I just don't do it. I just re-image the lab and call it good.
Oh, yeah. Now, do you re-image labs every summer?
This is what I do. We actually, with the way that we do our computer rotation and the funding that we get for, like, career and technology classes or whatever, we actually replace 3 to 4, possibly 5 computer labs every year. And so I'm replacing every year, every summer, I'm replacing those labs. And so... And those computers have to stay in those kinds of classrooms for a year. That's part of the money. That's part of the funding that they go. They have to stay in the career and technology classroom for at least a year. And so, like, last year's computers, I'm actually moving to another lab. And so they just sort of rotate everything down. So I do a lot of computer lab imaging every summer.
So what tools are you using to do the imaging?
Clonezilla. All day long, Clonezilla. I'm switching to Windows 10 now, and so I've had to overcome some things. I'm leaving Secure Boot on with the desktops now instead of turning that off, so that I could actually, since I don't have to actually load Windows 7 on a newer hardware machine, because you know Windows 7 really doesn't like those newer processors. Starting, I think, with not Skylake, but maybe the one before Sandy Bridge, I think maybe Ivy Bridge. They don't really like the newer processors, and so I had to turn off Secure Boot and all that other stuff to get it to load. But so now all the new ones, so I'm actually having to go back and turn on Secure Boot on all these other ones. And so, but they're all going to get re-imaged anyway.
Secure Boot's a great thing if you're in a supported environment. I mean, you'll never have a jacked up boot process when you're running Secure Boot.
And I've actually come to find that I like that. I really do like the Secure Boot a lot better. I don't know I don't know if just because I've been stuck in the old MBR days and not using the UEFI or whatever. I'm really enjoying it now. But so I'm doing that, and CloneZilla is like a Linux open source set of tools, basically part clone, NTFS clone, all these other drive tools, and they kind of put it with a little GUI. I mean, it's a little confusing first couple times you use it, but once you know the steps you need to do, it's really easy to follow. But I've had to overcome a few things with it. Like you have to use the alternative version as opposed to the standard version, because I think the standard version is Debian based and the alternative version is Ubuntu based, and Ubuntu is apparently the only one that can boot to the secure boot because it probably has a certificate and Debian really doesn't.
Yeah, Canonical actually paid Microsoft to have a certificate signed by them to be included in Secure Boot.
Truthfully, I've always preferred the Ubuntu based one anyway because it's got prettier colors.
It's purple, right?
It's purple. And instead of, I think, blue or pink or something, but it's real nice purple. I kind of like it better. I am an Ubuntu fan, so I kind of like it. With CloneZilla, though, you got a lot of times it's like you have to keep upgrading your boot disk to make sure that you can actually it can actually see the newer hardware, the newer drivers. I do have one this year that it doesn't like the current version that's out right now. Actually, the testing version, because I tried it with that one, because it's like you got like stable and you have like testing. So I tried the testing one, and it doesn't see the hard drive whenever you have a SATA setting turned on in the BIOS in the Dell. But you can just go turn the setting off, image, turn the setting back on, and then continue like nothing. So there's a workaround. It's just an extra step, but it's not really that big deal.
Yeah, is that that Intel RAID controller?
Exactly, that's exactly what it is. You have to turn the RAID off and set it to like AHCI mode instead of RAID on, and you can install it, and then you just have to go back in and turn it on. Now, I could probably just leave it on AHCI, but I have that Intel framework application technology driver F6 or whatever it's called. And so I don't want any like messages or whatever saying that that's broken or something, so I don't want anybody to see that. So I'll just take the extra couple seconds and go turn that on and off as I need it. But I find, I don't know what all imaging software you've used. I know you've used Fog and WDS. I find that CloneZilla, and you're actually the one that taught me CloneZilla and changed my life, so thank you for that.
Yeah, I apologize for some of those things I've taught you over the years.
But CloneZilla is one you don't apologize for, because it's great. I love it. I have used it since the day you taught me. I have used it everywhere. And I find it to be one of the best imaging solutions out there. It pretty much does everything I want to do. And the few headaches that I have every once in a while, the few hiccups that I've had to deal with, it's a lot better than trying to inject a driver into Windows deployment services.
Yeah, anything's better than trying to inject a driver into that. Now, I've used Fog in the past. I was a huge fan of Fog for a long time, and mainly because it was a hands-off approach to imaging, much like ZenWorks. If you've ever messed with Citrix environment, ZenWorks was my favorite application Citrix ever made. It was wonderful. In fact, even after eDirectory kind of faded away and they went to the SUSE Linux, ZenWorks was still around for a while because of all those management tools, and it was phenomenal. And Fog seems to be the kind of a spiritual successor to that. It is an open source project, actually written by a tech director in a school.
Yeah, I remember that. I remember you telling me about that. That the guy in school, he knew what he wanted to do for imaging, and so he built his own tool.
Yeah, and it's actually quite funny to look at the code. I mean, it is a, just like you or I, if we were to write something like that, it is a pretty hack job. I mean, there's PHP, there's bash scripts running in there, there's different TFTP servers all talking to each other. It works. It's insanely complicated, but it does work. It's a hands-off approach. I mean, it's nice, but to be honest, I use CloneZilla now too. It is hands-on, but I don't do so much imaging that it's a hassle.
Yeah, I'm imaging a lot, but even then, it's like you pop your jump drive in, copy it to RAM, pull it out when it's done, go on to the next one, and then you do a couple of them, then you go back, and you just kind of, you get a rhythm going, and it works. It's fine.
Yeah, I mean, I like it. It's a testament that even though I know there's probably some tools that are better out there, I still would come back to it every time.
I mean, and you can't beat the price, and for the things that it can do for the price, it's hard to beat. I mean, it's really, yeah, really hard to beat. I love it.
So what are some of the other stuff that you do during the summer in your environment?
Well, not only do we that's how we do computer rotations for our labs by buying the career and technology folks computers every year for their labs, but we also buy them projectors. And so I have like a projector rotation, or that's how I get new projectors. It's like all those classrooms and even the ones that don't have computer labs that are considered career and tech, like ag and some other ones, they get new projectors every year. So I'll pull those projectors down, pop in these new ones, and so I'll have all these other year-old projectors that I can go put in places that have projectors that need to be changed out. And that's really like the main things that we do every summer. We move labs around and we change projectors. Those are the things that absolutely have to be done. Now, this year, I'm doing some other things. I've got my Cisco ASA firewall is still running the 8.2 firmware. And that's pretty old now. And I have just held off on doing it because I didn't want to convert my NAT statements to network objects. And so I'm finally just going to bite the bullet and take care of that.
All right, so everybody listening, do not telnet into Matt's firewall.
Yes, do not telnet into Matt's firewall. You couldn't get into it anyway. I got it shut down for public access. So
I'm just picking.
I can, but everybody else can. But I have to VPN and then remote into a switch, and then I can get into it. I can't even get into it from the VPN directly.
There you go.
So I made it even more difficult for myself. But I'm also going to upgrade like the firmware and the controller, the wireless controller and the access points, and you know, just get all that stuff up to date, because it's a perfect time to do it because teachers and students and not a whole lot of staff are here. And I'm actually going to do mine on Fridays because even the limited admin staff, we're not going to be here on Fridays. And so I'm going to have like zero downtime for like users. Obviously, when I upgrade the firewall, it's going to go down, but it really won't affect anybody but me because I'll be the only one up here.
Now, I'll probably end up doing some of those things next week, and I don't know what your schedule is, but actually during the summer, we only have to work 4 days a week, so we only work Monday through Thursday, so again, Fridays are awesome for those really downtime things.
Yeah, and that's exactly what ours is too. We work Monday through Thursday, but I'll probably work the Fridays anyway just because of all the projects that I need to get done. It calls downtime. Like, I need to move home directories from one server to the next. I know we talked about moving everything to Google Drive, but unfortunately we're not there yet. So
no, and we're not there either. I'm going to be doing the exact same thing. I have two legacy file servers that I'm going to move into another one and adding to our DFS architecture.
Yeah, and I actually created a DFS architecture and I am loving that thing. I have like three things left to finish up on my server 2016 migration. So, and moving home directories is the big one. And so, and that's going to take probably two and a half days to move all those files. So, because there's just so many little files everywhere.
Yeah, looking at I use Google Keep to kind of manage my summers. And on my server migrations, I only have one thing I need to push into my 2016 cluster. But then the other things are like moving my DHCP servers around to a newer machine and kind of deprecating the old one, getting those file shares in the DFS, and then adding some replication partners and the ever so daunting setup packet fence.
Yeah, I move some of those critical services like DHCP and Radius and stuff over a weekend one day because I really wanted to get them done. So I probably could have waited till summer, but I know how stacked my summers usually are with dealing with labs and stuff like that and building computer images. In fact, I have...
Yeah, because you're pretty much it there.
I have 8 computers sitting on my floor that I have to build images for. So be installing Windows a whole lot next week. But yeah, the only things I got left in my migration is I think I got to move home directories and I have to move the cafeteria database to a new server. And the company's actually going to work with me on Monday, and we're actually going to move that then, and so that will be another checkbox checked off for that server migration. And so once I move home directories, that project will be complete. So I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, the only other things that I have to do with construction projects, new phone systems, those kind of things that only come up every few years.
Yeah. Summers are busy. I mean, that's when it's like we're busy throughout the year, but a lot of times it's like reactive stuff, like this breaks, we have to go fix them. But during the summer, it's a lot of times where we can be proactive, where we can clean up machines, we can put in new machines, we can change out all this stuff, and everybody comes back and nobody's none the wiser. So yeah, summers are busy for us, but We'll be here next week again, because we'll make time for it in our busy schedules to do this, and we'll talk about some more stuff. Maybe what we got going on if something comes up. We'll also talk next week about WWDC. I'll be excited about that. I'll get to chatter on incoherently like we did about Yahoo, about Apple. So, but if you have any questions or feedback regarding anything we've discussed, you can reach out to us on Twitter. Chris is at Feeks, and I am at Twist of Matt. You can also send an email to educatingtech.gmail.com. For more episodes or links to subscribe, visit educatingtech.net. And that's our show, and we'll see you next week.